Welcome to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines, changing the conversation around divorce. This show is sponsored by Penguin in the Room. Penguin in the Room is an award-winning arts marketing and social media management company. If you want to jazz up your socials and have someone Instagram and tweet for you, then here's your answer. Go to www.penguinintheroom.com. As always, hit subscribe to make sure you're updated about new episodes. And we love to hear from you on social media at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. You can also email us. All the info's on our website, thedivorcesocial.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I am joined by Francesca Spector, author of Alonement, the book, and host of Alonement, the podcast. Hello.
Hello, Sam. Lovely to be here.
Welcome to the Divorce Club.
Thank you.
How does that make you feel when I say welcome to the Divorce Club?
Well, you know, it's a bit of a fraud because, of course, as we spoke about, I'm not actually divorced, but I have been in quite a few long-term relationships, which, yes, possibly those breakups have somewhat of the same elements in terms of yes, all the dividing up of assets, even though the assets were more like our friends, and yes, all the classic breakup tropes of moving past it.
Do you remember one particularly difficult relationship that you want to talk about, the breakup?
Yes, so I suppose the one that's most relevant is the one that indirectly led to the establishing of my whole platform, Alonement. So to explain a little bit briefly why that is, I was in what I now know was a rather codependent relationship for about 2.5 years. So leading up to, we broke up at the end of 2018, leading up to that time. And that was a relationship where I learned a lot about my fear of being alone, which, of course, you know, predated the relationship, and how that fear, and I think this is something that speaks quite universally, and again is, you know, hopefully why this can be applicable to any breakup, divorce or otherwise, that fear of being alone can quite often lead us to either enter into or at least perpetuate relationships which aren't quite working, which is why, of course, I found it so relevant when I started exploring as a personal journey my own fear of being alone and realized how much of a consequence that can have on one's life decisions.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why I contacted you about the podcast, because of your podcast and the book. And I'm so interested in this idea of us being alone, because as well with my divorce, you know, that's something that I've had to get used to. I live alone now and I'm single and I have a cat and a puppy, but that's it. But you said there that the desire to not be alone might stop you or stop someone from leaving a relationship. Do you think that stopped you in the past?
Certainly, yeah. In every type of relationship, however short-lived, you know, I think, you know, from one end of the spectrum, you know, staying on for that extra drink with someone that on a date that I knew wasn't quite right for me, just because, you know, going home alone seemed like a worse option. Or indeed staying in things for, you know, I think that things were pretty much over with my ex, you know, probably about, God, a good 6 months or so before, you know, before we actually did break up. You know, we're very sort of acrimonious. And, you know, that might not sound like a hugely long time in the context of, well, divorce, of course, because, it, you know, it takes so bloody long to finalize everything. But I think that, you know, any amount of time we spend running away from our own feelings and you know, not facing up to our own selves, and instead clinging onto someone else, I think that, you know, that is time that's, you know, very badly spent. That, you know, when, you know, I think that the alternative, it might seem harder, it might seem sort of, you know, like ripping off a plaster, but actually is something that is much more rewarded.
And when did you realize that you were scared of being alone? Do you remember that first realization? Were you still in the relationship, or was it afterwards?
It was afterwards. The idea of alone time being something that could be in any way positive, that wasn't something that I ever had any knowledge of in any relationship that I had. You know, on the one hand, I think that that probably was to the detriment of those relationships, because, you know, any couple that spends no time apart really suffers. And, you know, I think without exception, I think that, you know, your relationship suffers and you suffer as individuals. So, you know, it was never something that actually occurred to me. And ultimately the reason for the breakup was that things became so negative between us. It had to become so awful and so spiteful between, you know, two people who, you know, I'd like to believe both of us were and are good people, but, you know, a lot of negativity had to fester in order to properly make us make the decision to call it a day. And it was only afterwards, you know, in the wake of that breakup, that my reaction to it consisted of things like going on those terrible dates, or, you know, booking up my calendar, or, you know, doing whatever I could to avoid spending a night in with myself. And of course, I had at that time more alone time by virtue of the fact, you know, my ex had all but moved in. So, you know, I suddenly had a lot more alone time because I was living alone for the first time in my life. And, you know, I was single at, you know, a time when I'd spent a lot of years socializing as part of a couple. And it was really because of that extra alone time I was getting and my inability to navigate it in a way that was healthy or meaningful or seemed in any way triumphant, that was what turned me into looking at alone time. It was a plan B to begin with.
I think a lot of people will be able to relate to that feeling of being scared of being alone and navigating the world again, as you said, without that other person that you always have there as a sort of comfort blanket or protection. And not that they were necessarily a protector, but just that having someone else kind of to deflect or you know, keep the conversation going, it's not all relying on you, is it? I'm interested in what the physical manifestation of alonement felt like to you at the time. Is it like that blind white hot fear, or was it more of a slow ache?
Ooh, you know, I've never been asked that before. I mean, I didn't know any way that alone time could be other than lonely. And the way that I describe how that loneliness feels is a sort of restlessness, a sort of darkness, a sort of sense that you won't ever be reanimated again until other people come into your life. You know, that sense of feeling so thoroughly disconnected with yourself, despite being alone with yourself, you know, that, and it's a very strange feeling. You know, we talk about connection in terms of other people, but feeling disconnected from yourself, it definitely is that state of loneliness. And I think moving that into something that became alone months, the joy of spending time alone, it required a lot of practice. And every time I came to that, every time I planned to spend an evening by myself and tried to bring some sort of attention to this thing called alone time that I was exploring, I would still feel that sense of restlessness. But the more that I did it, the more that it was replaced with a feeling of bravery, as well, and a feeling of almost, the only way I can describe it is being impressed with myself. And it's, you know, it's a weird one to describe, but almost that feeling where I did feel like, you know, there was like a presence of someone kind of comforting, you know, beside me, even if that person I knew was really just, you know, me connecting with me.
I think that's really interesting because I, you know, before we spoke, I was thinking, how can you explain the feeling of loneliness without the word? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you really dig deep into it. And I like what you said about the darkness. And I totally relate to that. Like, feeling alone feels like being completely in the dark with no light and no hope for a light in the future. And I always used to be scared of the dark when I'm younger as well. So that's particularly scary for me. Because I always say to people on the podcast, you know, do you remember a low moment in the breakup? But I guess for you, I'm interested, do you remember your loneliest moment?
Yes, actually. The loneliest moment was within the relationship towards the end, because I think that when you become codependent on a partner, the loneliest time is when you realize that actually their company isn't sufficient to make you feel connected, and you have no capacity to do that by yourself. It's a really horrible paradox. And I remember, I think this was the night before we actually did break up, I remember we were supposed to be going out together to a party. And for some, we'd been arguing nonstop. It had been like the most awful endurance test of arguments about everything, you know, just like throwing things, not quite physically, but certainly verbally at each other that weren't very nice. And I remember we decided that he was going to go to the party and I was going to stay home alone, which was incredibly uncharacteristic for me, for someone who at the time was an extrovert without any capacity to be alone. But it, you know, things had just become so toxic that there was just no way we could really be out in public together without, you know, without anything unpleasant. And I remember when he came back and, you know, I felt guilty that I hadn't gone to this party and I felt sad for what had happened, but I pretended to be asleep rather than talk to him because I couldn't face us talking. We got to the point where we had had so much build up between us that, you know, I pretended to be asleep rather than talk to or comfort the person that, you know, at that point I still loved more than anyone in the world. And it was very, very sad. And I think that there was, you know, even in the time afterwards, when, you know, I did have to get used to sleeping alone, being alone, living this very different, much more alone life, even in all of those times, nothing was lonelier than sleeping beside him and, well, pretending to be asleep beside him and, you know, not reaching out to comfort him in the darkness.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that moment. And it actually really reminds me of a moment in my marriage. Lying next to my, you can hear my puppy in the background, and it's like she remembers this moment too, even though she wasn't here. But it was me lying next to my ex-husband and crying in bed. He was falling asleep, but I'm not sure if he was fully asleep. And I was crying and the bed was shaking. So he must have felt it, but neither of us broached that sort of silence. And I think there's something so lonely about sharing a bed. It is that thing, isn't it, of sharing a bed. When after a breakup and you're in bed on your own, you sort of feel the other half of the emptiness of the bed. But yeah, there's nothing lonelier than being in a bed with someone, a really intimate space.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, your puppy feeling. really is feeling the sadness of that moment. And I, you know, I'm so sorry, like, again, just imagining that. And, you know, again, it seems to be such a recurring trope. I think, you know, the marital bed, the bed where you spend your time with your partner, it is such a symbol, I think. And it's, you know, it's at the very start of a relationship, it's, you know, a wonderful place to be together. And it's, you know, that being able to have that intimacy in every sense together is such a special thing to build. So the idea that it's then the same site where everything crumbles and where you're sort of, you know, together but alone in a really horrible sense, I think that, you know, I think probably a lot of people listening can, you know, relate to that difficulty as well.
It's just such an interesting emotion. Would you call loneliness an emotion?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because people do find loneliness quite hard to A, talk about, and B, sort of describe the sensation of. But I think in terms of how it feels as well, I think sometimes it might be helpful to think of it as a place that you go to, because I think quite often it takes us away from ourselves even. And, you know, it's difficult once you're in loneliness, once you're in that place of loneliness, it's quite difficult to proactively work your way out of it. So I think that sometimes the better thing to do can be to almost create that framework in your life.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If in order to stop you going into it before you sort of are in, you know, are sort of immersed in this and can't really claw your way out, I think.
I think viewing it as a place is a really interesting one. That really made me think in a positive way about it, because then it's like you go to this place, you feel the loneliness, but you can leave the place as well. It's not like a state that you're stuck in. So you have this breakup. You have this realization that you are afraid of being alone. What then? What was your next step? Did you try to delve into that feeling, or did you try to not be alone? Because that was my automatic reaction.
Yes. Well, I definitely relate to what you say about that automatic reaction. I probably did very similar things. I don't know about you. I spent a lot of time trying to book up every plan I could, or you know, do all sorts of things. You know, stay. You know, I was part of a very sociable workplace at the time. Every happy hour going, I was there. And it was one of those companies where there did seem to be happy hours at least twice a week. So, you know, I was really at a time when I probably could have benefited from a lot of sort of self-care, or, you know, simply thinking, journaling, all of that, all the stuff I do now. I was trying to get away from myself at any cost without really any standards.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. I like booked up my diary. I made sure I was really, really busy. And actually, when you're going through such a difficult time, like a breakup, you need some space to feel those feelings. So if you're booking up your diary because you don't want to be alone, which I did, you're also stopping yourself from dealing with all those other emotions. Although I did have quite a lot of fun because I was just going out every single night.
Yeah, no, it's true. It is, you know what, it is a really fun time. And looking back, it's funny because I don't know if I'd, you know, I know the bad sort of social times. I know that, you know, the infamously the terrible, terrible date that led to me deciding, right, I'm going to lean into alonement now. But I do also know, you know, when I broke up with my ex, it was November, December time. In a pre-pandemic world, which hard to remember now, but you know, it was back-to-back Christmas parties. It was pretty damn fun. So as much as definitely I was losing out from it, I think in the very immediate aftermath of a breakup, I mean, I'd never advise someone to just be alone all the time. I suppose, you know, looking back now, or you know, if I were to do it again, a balance would be better. I think definitely I definitely wouldn't advocate against, you know, booking up some really fun things to do after a breakup, because, you know, when you've been sad for so long, it's just such a celebration, you know, it's the beauty of contrast.
Yeah, definitely. So when was that realization that, okay, I've been trying to book up my schedule, I've been on all these terrible dates. When did you think I'm going to try and lean into this now? And what did you do?
So it was one particularly terrible date where I was treated incredibly rudely. And I think I came, and I did walk out of the date, but I remember just sort of sitting there, and I was actually on my best friend's bed. And I'd gone straight to hers from the date, which was quite funny because she was also on a double date with her partner and her friend's partner at her flat. So they were sort of having this double date, and I just sort of rock up, this Bridget Jones figure, and sort of crying in the room next door where she was. But you know, it was
you walked out of your date and walked in on someone else's
into theirs. Yeah, completely. Yeah, I think we were just like, right, put the boys in one room, they'll watch the football, and yeah, it was all a big cliche.
What was so bad about the date for you to walk out? Because I'm such a people pleaser. I remember when I first started dating, I was like, I have to stay on all of these dates for a whole evening, even if I'm not having a nice time. And I slowly learned, oh, you don't have to do that. Like, you can meet the person and talk to them and then be honest and leave.
In this scenario, we were having dinner on a Saturday night, and I realized he was eating really fast or something like that. I realized that he seemed to be rushing. And then he announced that he actually could only stay for another sort of half an hour. And I was like, okay, well, look, if you need to go, you know, we should really cut this short. You know, I didn't know if he just sort of wasn't feeling the date. And then he said to me, no, I've actually double booked this evening. I wanted to see you, so I booked dinner, but I'm actually going to meet friends. Why don't you go and stay at my flat and you know, wait for me until I get back from going out with friends? And I just thought, what?
That is very strange.
It was so incredibly offensive. And, clearly a bit of an optimist. I think he sort of thought, have dinner with the woman, seduce the woman, tell the woman I've actually double booked her, but expect her to wait for me. It was such offensive, strange behaviour that I did actually, pay my half the bill and walk out. But it was very strange. So that happened. And I kind of, especially after being in, what was, a breakup aside, fundamentally a loving, good, functioning relationship, it just felt so upsetting that I kind of thought, God, this is the dating world. This is what I have to go through. This is, in an extreme way, the consequence of my fear of being alone, that I have to, I have to sort of put up with this kind of person.
And obviously you don't. I just want to say, for anyone listening, you don't have to put up with that treatment, as you didn't. Pay your half of the bill, get out of there.
Yeah. It was empowering, but also it was just so, looking back, I still shake my head and think, God, I mean, thankfully nothing has happened since. I've dated much nicer people, and it's always been really lovely. But I think that definitely, developing that baseline of, self-respect, and also probably being a bit more shrewd in my choice of, who to go on a date with now, has definitely helped. I went to my best friend's flat.
So you're sitting on her bed crying.
Sitting on her bed crying, yeah. And they were being absolutely lovely. It was actually two of my best friends who were together. They were sort of double dating with their partners. And I think, even though I couldn't have had this advice from someone else, it was the advice I was sort of giving myself. I remember sort of being comforted by them, going home, and just having this revelation that I wasn't going to live my life like that anymore. It was almost an extreme version of, hey, you hate being alone, this is how, what you have to tolerate. And I went the other way. And this was very late December, I think. And by that January, because it was a New Year's resolution, I had resolved to learn to spend time alone and to like it. And this didn't mean being single, this didn't mean being celibate, this didn't mean any of that, but it simply meant that alongside anything I was doing, I would always have this practice, this value of learning to spend time alone in a way that was beneficial to me. And that's when I coined the word alonement.
Do you remember the first thing you did? Did you have like steps of like, right, I've got to do these things on my journey to being okay being on my own? Or did you have activities?
Yeah. So the problem was, there was no manual for doing this. That's why ultimately I wrote my book. But at the time, there was nothing. And I simply went to the only forms of being alone that I knew to do in a way that was healthy, which was, number one, journaling, which I'd always sort of done, but on and off. And curiously, I didn't do that for, you know, the duration of my relationship. So, you know, that's 2.5 years where I didn't journal.
And what would you, how would you describe journaling for anyone who sort of isn't quite familiar with it? Is it like a diary?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's absolutely however you want to do it. You know, I think that there's, you know, you can buy really beautiful diary journals on Etsy or something. And these lovely, you know, this lovely stationery with lots of different sections, but, you know, writing your sort of, what are your, you know, what are your 10 dream goals for the month? All of these different sort of prompts. I think they're really lovely. For me, that's never worked. For me, and I, you know, I'm a writer, I'm a fairly, you know, I've never someone that liked nice stationery at school. Like I'm not particularly, you know, I'm creative, but I'm not particularly artistic. If I write something on paper, it doesn't look very pretty. So yeah, I just had this old yellow moleskin notebook. It was totally battered even then, and, you know, which I picked up and I started writing in that. And, you know, it's quite nice to have that. You know, yellow is my favorite color, not to sound like a five-year-old, but, you know, it is. And it's nice to have something that sort of reminds you of you and the essence of you. And I just sit there and, you know, maybe I didn't keep myself to it too rigorously. But, you know, I just every couple of nights or so, I'd sit and write in this diary and just write how I was feeling. It was just a stream of consciousness. And over time, it just allowed me to have a conversation with me again and to confront the thoughts that I had deadened by piling everything onto my partner, or, you know, or not, and not knowing how to articulate it. There's something about that that means that you can't ruminate as much. So, you know, if you write, I'm feeling, you know, scared I can't cope without them, or I'm, you know, feeling really sad today or whatever, or, you know, if it's something like you're dealing with an inner critic and you think, oh, you know, you won't be able to cope alone, any of those negative thoughts that we all come out with in the wake of a breakup, you can only really say them a couple of times, absolute max, because then you're just, you know, it's like writing lines at school when you get detention. And I did enough of that at school. And I think that, yeah, it does force you to move forward in a way that even talking to a friend, I don't, you know, even, or thinking thoughts, certainly, they do tend to circle you like a shark without being very productive. It allowed me to be a friend to myself, a compassionate friend to myself, rather than just this sort of inner critic.
I think it's really interesting what you said about you can't say the same thing over and over again, because it's like writing lines. So it forces you to kind of express yourself in a new and maybe deeper way, which is great. So other than journaling, did you do things like, because I remember when I had my breakup and then I was on my own and I was like, I can't go out to posh dinners anymore. Like, no one's going to take me to dinner. So I went out for a dinner on my own and I loved it. And I even went on holiday on my own, which it was something that really kind of scared me before, but actually it was brilliant because I could just decide exactly what I was going to do. Did you kind of force yourself to do things on your own, or things that you were scared of doing?
Yes, and I love that you went out and tackled all that. I think that that is the response. You know, it's like, you know, well, you know, fuck you. Like, I don't need you to put those lovely things in my life into action. You know, I can go to a nice dinner alone. I can go on a solo holiday alone. And yes, certainly that was my philosophy. I still, you know, to this day have a rule that if I love doing something with other people, I need to learn to do it alone as well. You know, not necessarily because I expect to be doing these things alone always, or I expect to be single always. I don't, but I need to know I can do both those things. It's incredibly empowering. And it was my next step after all, you know, the journaling, and then, you know, thinking about alone time, and, you know, things like planning a few more nights at home every week, or just learning to be comfortable with my own thoughts. Yes, the next step was doing things alone in public. And of course, the other complication behind that, as I was anticipating it, is that when you go out in public, it's almost built around, you know, being in a multiple of two. You know, the tables are set up in that way. at cinemas, you've got 2-for-1 deals. The world does seem to be built to suggest that you shouldn't be doing these things alone as a solo customer. And the inside secret is, you know, as I'm sure as you already know, Sam, and you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, but you know, to everyone listening, is that it is wonderful to do things alone. And not only that, you can almost enjoy them in a distinctive way, you know, not necessarily a superior way, but certainly a distinctive way from how you might with another person. So take, you know, I started going out for breakfast by myself on Saturday morning. And that's something I still do and still look forward to every week, my Saturday morning breakfast ritual. And when you go and do that, you can sit there, you can order whatever you like for brunch, for breakfast, without, you know, having to sort of, I don't know about you, I'm never a big fan of the whole diplomacy involved of sharing something. I'd always rather quite selfishly order my own. And you can, you know, you can sit there, you can read the papers, you can just get, you know, I sit there and I plan to, I save up all my long reads on my iPad from sort of Apple News, you know, those long read articles that I want to read. I save them all up for that Saturday morning space. And, you know, that's a really engaged, mindful time when I feel very connected to myself. So learning to do those things. And again, you know, learning to go to the cinema by myself, on balance, I think I prefer doing that alone compared to even with other people. Sorry to anyone that I go to the cinema with. But, you know, doing those things, you know, they can be a really, really joyful experience. And I think that it just took, and, you know, I speak about this in my book, but it just took developing those solitude skills. So, you know, even little things like when you walk into a table, just, you know, not saying, oh, it's, you know, it's just me, but, you know, saying confidently, table for one, please. You know, it really, it helps reinforce to you and to everyone around you that it's perfectly valid to do things solo.
Yeah, I do think sometimes it's other people that makes it worse. Like when you're like table for one and maybe the waiter looks at you like, oh.
Yeah.
And you're, but I think if you yeah, own it, then they can't look at you with pity because you're like, I'm going to enjoy my lunch. And I think we've seen so often in films that classic thing where someone goes for dinner on their own and then the waiter clears up the other place with all the yeah. cutlery so that their table only has one place setting. But yeah, I think I was so scared of being on my own, which is why I'm so drawn to all of the work you do. And still now I am, but I have forced myself to do things like go on holiday. And I think you don't have to, I'm an extreme person, so you don't have to be as extreme as me and go, oh, I don't like being alone, I'm going to go away on my own for a week. But little baby steps. And actually, yeah, I love going for food on my own now because you can just enjoy the food. You don't have to like make small talk about something else. You can like go for your favorite breakfast and then just savor it, or get a little notebook and look like a professional writer deep in your
all
thoughts.
Of it. Yeah. I call that taking a prop. You know, it's nice to have, you know, yeah, like a book or a notepad. And, you know, you might not even write in it. You know, you might just use it as a sort of device, you know, behind which you can sit and people watch, which is a wonderful thing to do alone. We haven't mentioned that one yet, but, you know, I think that, you know, there's lots of lovely ways that you can spend that time.
And now people might be listening and thinking that, you know, talking about being alone, maybe we're coming from a very privileged perspective of the fact that we get to have time alone. You know, and we're not working constantly and I don't have, you know, children to look after and things like that. But for anyone who's obviously, you know, got a lot going on, but they still want to have those pockets of time alone, are there any things that you'd suggest that they can do that are just like 2 minutes on your own or a little activity that they can do maybe out in the garden or on the loo, my favourite time? That might help.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think 2 minutes might be a little bit ambitious, but 10 minutes certainly can go a long way. I think, you know, even something like sitting there having a cup of tea by the window, you know, looking out and just being still. I love that the birds are solid singing, just to, you know, just to almost sell this to people listening. But yeah, just being still and just taking that time and just being, and again, that just, it builds up your confidence, I think, of being able to, you know, have that sense of stillness and being in your own head for a little bit, those baby steps that, you know, that time that you used. I think, you know, anything that keeps you in your own head in a healthy way, you know, journaling, 10 minutes of headspace meditation, A 10-minute yoga flow, just those things that allow you to be comfortably with yourself. And I think that, you know, even if it is, we tend to think that doing something for a wellness that only lasts for a short while isn't worthwhile and that it won't make a difference. But, you know, if we spent 10 minutes, you know, smoking cigarettes a day, then we'd probably assume that that had an impact on our health. So why can we not assume that doing, you know, 10 minutes of alone time can have just as much an impact in a positive way?
That's a brilliant comparison. I like that. And when does being alone get too far, get off balance? Where is
in a pandemic?
Yes. But where is that balance, you know, between connecting with other people and being alone? Could you survive being alone, you know, 6 days a week and then just have one day of social life?
Hell no. No. I came to this as an extrovert. I still am an extrovert. And I think that, you know, the balance, it does change. I think that, you know, I can only speak for where I am right now. I think had I come from a period where I had been constantly around people, say I'd been, you know, on holiday with my favorite people and, you know, felt that I just wanted to wring every single social moment out of that. And so I, you know, I hadn't taken any time for me. You know, I would quite possibly come back from that thinking that was wonderful. Now I maybe do feel able to have perhaps not 6 days, but, you know, at least maybe 3 days alone and enjoy all the things that I've sort of been missing out on. But, you know, day to day, and especially after what has been the most alone and in some ways the most lonely year of my life, which was inevitable because there was no capacity to have balance. You know, I spent 3 months not hugging, not having contact with another human outside of Zoom. And that was really hard. You know, coming out from that space, then I think it really is just about navigating that balance. I try and, you know, I have all sorts of ways that I try and get that sort of social solo balance. Like I like to have rituals in the weekend. So I like to, you know, preferably have at least one night of the weekend where I'm, you know, where I have a night in by myself and I really plan it, and, you know, at least the whole of Saturday morning. You know, and so as long as that's in there, that is enough solo time in the weekend for me, especially because I work quite independently during the week. And, you know, in the week, I try not to go more than a couple of days without, you know, at least going for a walk with someone or a coffee. And, you know, I think that, again, but I'm speaking from my very particular situation where I don't have colleagues. I am single. I do live alone. I don't have pets. I don't really have any incidental, you know, social time that's going to come to me. So I have to sort of make it. I have to be quite proactive about it. The balance will be different for everyone. And, you know, I think that it depends where you fall on the sort of introversion, extroversion scale, because it is a scale. It's just, you know, it can be a scale that you slide up and down. Even at different stages of your life, you might have more introvert and more extrovert years. You know, it can depend on, you know, I think that alone time can be a fluctuating commodity for people. I think that, you know, a lot of parents who've, you know, had to spend all their time around others, around their, you know, around their children, around their babies, you know, literally, you know, if not actually, you know, like metaphorically, umbilically attached to them. You know, I think that they might really relish alone time, an extreme alone time.
It's funny because I have a new puppy called Custard who has been making noise throughout this recording because she's annoying. But I love her, but I feel like I haven't had any alone time since I got her because she's with me 24/7. I'm like, I just need a little bit. Going to the toilet is the most peace I have at the moment, and so I relish it. So we spoke earlier about the kind of loneliness, feeling like you're in the darkness. So as contrast to that, if you've coined alonement as the enjoyment of being on your own, so how does that feel and how does it physically manifest?
It feels so incredibly energizing in a way that I never knew alone time could be. So, for instance, yesterday evening I had a call like an alonement evening in, and it was great. You know, 6 o'clock, I sort of switched off my devices. I put on some Joni Mitchell. I wanted a more upbeat albums. I got out loads of fresh ingredients from my fridge, which I'd sort of bought ahead of time. I sort of chopping dinner. I got a glass of wine. I laid the table. I had a really, really wonderful sort of, I really wined and dined myself. And then I was reading a really wonderful book that I'm reading at the moment by Kate Murphy called You're Not Listening, on, the power of listening to people better. And then I went on a sort of walk, sunset walk through kind of Primrose Hill, Regent Park, and it was really, really gorgeous. And of course that is, that's a luxury at the moment, because as a woman, you can't always walk alone late at night. But of course the sunset allows for it right now. But anyway, so I did all of that and I just felt so full of energy for the people around me. I felt connected. I think I described it earlier in terms of feeling held. I felt held by myself and warm and glowy and full of energy and wanting to, almost like sort of internal sunshine, and wanting to radiate that out. And I think that, it's funny, because we can spend time alone and it can feel absolutely the opposite. But if we push through and, think about making that time alone into that quality alonement experience, it constantly surprises me again and again how much sunshine that can give me and how much that can then go on to affect and, radically improve my interactions with others.
I love that, because you described loneliness as darkness and then alonement as sunshine. But obviously with the sun, as opposed to kind of electric lighting, there's always that darkness as well from shadows and things like that. And I think that's a really lovely sort of visual metaphor for the two, and reframing the idea of being alone, I think, is so important. And that's what's so great about the kind of work that you're doing and encouraging everyone to do, because automatically you think if there's one person on their own that that's a sad thing, and actually it can be a brilliant thing. And it sounds like it recharges you as well, because obviously people can't see you, but as soon as you started talking about your evening alone, you like lit up and were like smiling. So I love it. What advice would you give anyone who's listening, maybe just after a breakup or just before a breakup, when they're still in that relationship and you still feel that loneliness and they're thinking, I can't ever imagine being on my own feeling nice? Are there any words of advice or comfort or wisdom that you'd give them?
I'm trying to think what I said to myself back then, because it was a very hard time. I describe it at the beginning of the book, I describe it, it's like sort of jumping into the blind unknown. It is like hoping against hope and not knowing who will catch you. But I suppose it's just that boldness is rewarded, because, I think that we are so conditioned to think a relationship, even a bad relationship, will be the better experience. But there is hope on the other side. And you will never regret making a bold decision like that for your own happiness. You will never regret choosing yourself. And it might not seem like that at the time, and there will not be immediate gratification. But the more that you reinforce that, the more that you sort of believe in yourself, that you hope against hope, the more that it will be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I love that. That's great advice. And thank you so much. This has been such a great chat. Where can people find your podcast? And please remind us of the title of the book and where we can get it.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you, Sam. And so, yes, you can get the podcast is Alonement. And you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the usual platforms. And Alonement, How to Be Alone and Absolutely Own It, is available on Amazon, Waterstones, WH Smith, Foyles, all the usual vendors, online, and very happily in person these days. So yeah, that's where you can find that. And yes, Sam, thank you so much. This has been so wonderful and has caused me to think about so many things that, you know, I hadn't quite reflected on before, particularly in terms of the, you know, the physical manifestations of those feelings. I think that's so fascinating to reflect on. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been great. And thank you for putting up with my puppy Custard and her squealing. And I should say you're on social media as well, so people can find you. It's just at your full name, Francesca Spector. So thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh, hi. Thank you for listening to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines. Please leave us a review. Please, please. It would be super nice. They're lovely to read. They keep me cheery and happy and keep me going. But also, it affects our listing in the podcast charts, which are very important because that's how more people find the podcast. And I'd love to help more people get through those really tough heartbreak and divorce times. And they're more likely to find us if we're higher up on the charts. So if you'd like to leave a review, I'd love you forever. You can leave them on iTunes is the big one, or most podcast platforms do them as well. I'll take all the reviews you've got to give. You can also get in contact on Twitter and Instagram at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we have a Patreon account, which means that you can support the podcast for as little as £2 a month. And it helps me with all the admin costs. It also means you have access to our 90s style divorce and heartbreak chat room. And there's lots of exclusives on there, little bits of audio that you don't get in the main podcast, and some giveaways as well. So I'd love to see you over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Samantha Baines. And please leave a review. Did I say that already? Please leave a review. Love you forever.